Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Welcome back, team. Todd Doherty and the Manage Me Podcast. Today, we continue our conversation with Bert Tucker. We learned about where he came from and his hardships and how he got his business sense in the last episode. This episode, we learn about him building his businesses and where he's headed and where he's going. Stay tuned. It's exciting.
In 2003, I'm at UGA and just I'm being removed from the stuff that I actually love.
You're now doing the stuff that Rick was talking about, that you weren't doing the things you wanted to do because you, like Rick, were being distracted with all the other, I'll call it, business aspects.
Ancillary things of that justify what you say. But the issue was I became further and further removed from my passion of what it was all about. Yep. And so, and then the pinnacle of that was when I'm trying to get a guy, an AAU street guy, to come work camp, because he's got players that we're recruiting and we want him on camp and we want to be able to legally pay him, right, to form those relationships. And he flat out says it's going to cost you $40,000 to be able to get involved with this kid.
Wow.
And I was just like, good Lord, that's how toxic this stuff has become. That summer camp, I actually had I made it a parent-child camp because we had a dad with a daughter and we had a mom with a son. And there's a bunch of other, mostly fathers and sons. And this one guy pulled me aside and was like, dude, tell me your story, man. Like, how'd you get here? So I tell him my story, living in my car, and blah, blah, blah. I'm talking to my mother since I was 19, yada, yada, yada. And then he says, with my sales and business background and your knowledge and charisma, I'll make you a millionaire. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. And so it kind of stuck. And then he followed up with me a couple more times into the fall and the winter. And then the kicker for me was I had a blood clot in February of 2004, the night before we played Kentucky, and my leg swelled up 2.5 inches in 5 hours. And that was while laying there in St. Mary's Hospital in Athens, Georgia, I just made the old ledger.
Wow. Health crisis. Sometimes it takes a major life event to slap you in the face with some reality. Like, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? It happens. And unfortunately, it is the wake-up call that many of us have. My year this year, in September, lost my mom. 5 days later, put my dog down. 10 days later, wife was in the hospital with heart issues for 2 days. It really, really makes you step back and say, what's really important in your life? And, you know, it's a good self-check. You should try it before you have a health crisis, if at all possible.
Okay, why did you get into college coaching for $2,500? I didn't want to grow up and get a real job. And the answer to that was, I wanted to be an athlete and eventually you can't play anymore. And then I wrote down all the other things on the other side of that I did on a daily basis that I could care less about. And so that was my trigger for me. So I had the blood clot in February. I walked away from my career in April. I got cussed out for an hour and a half. And that was a whole nother story of I had another different position, but that was okay. But the more I was getting cussed out at by my boss, it was more affirmation of, okay, I really am making the right decision right now. Thank you. And so created a business with another guy in May. By June, I realized he was a shaky bird, got married in July.
Wow.
By September, I realized that my new business partner was a crook and was pulling a scam with Fulton County Schools. Oh boy. And then in November, December, we were going our separate ways and had attorneys and It took, 2 months to work through that. Right. And he wasn't going to pay me the money that he owed me. But I had access to the database that I had built, and I was on my own, free and clear. And then the next spring, I had 29 kids in a church gym that paid, $300. But, and my goal was, and I wrote this all out, I have a framed envelope from my Cobra health insurance when I left UGA, that I sat there when I was breaking away from the partner and creating my own business. And I wrote down all the different ideas and revenue streams on the one side of this envelope. And then a worker,
that was someone, your business plan.
Someone that I worked with, I didn't even know what a business plan was. I had no business training. Even again, my old man was a truck driver, and he'd always say, "Hey, Pecky, just go get a freaking business degree." And I had no idea what that meant, But I wrote this envelope on this envelope, and started with these 29 kids in the gym, two nights a week. And the kicker was, and then okay, that got was word of mouth, and then that summer I had a couple of camps ready to go. And I literally, at one point, lost my first gym for my first camp on my own on a Friday because my former partner was disparaging me with superintendents,
right,
principals, and athletic directors. And I lost my camp in Bowling Green, Kentucky, because I had a guy that wanted me to come back there and do something. And then I lost my camp here in Atlanta.
When life throws you softball-sized lemons, curveballs at that rate, what do? You make lemonade. Notice how Bert doesn't focus on the negative. He just keeps going, keeps focused on what do I do next? What do I do next? That's the way you do it, folks.
And then I was literally like just at the old Milton High School thinking like, what am I going to do? This is it. Might as well just eat a bullet and call it a day. And so... I called this one. I'm trying to think who can get me access to a gym. And while sitting there thinking, my phone rings. And it's a mom who had a kid of one of my original 29 kids. And she was all bubbly. She's a Christian teacher at a private school. And she's like, "Hey, Kosaka, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. You won't believe the story we just had." And I'm like, what's up? And she goes, "Well, I just wanted you to know, we just spent $500 on a 4-day camp at Duke University. And I just picked up my seventh grader and just said, hey, how was your week?" And his response was, "It's not as good as collegiate prep."
Nice.
And so, well, Cindy, and
here's the deal.
Here's my situation right now. And I needed a gym, and she made a couple phone calls. Next thing you know, I'm talking to a guy that basically saved my life named Bob Lord. How about that? How's the irony in that?
Right.
I think the football field at Fellowship Christian School in Roswell, George, is now named after him, but he was from the state of Maine, had coached in the NFL, and he and I talked for 30 minutes. We hit it off, and we're, tight as all get out, and I was able to just move the camp 3 miles down the road.
To a different gym.
To a different gym.
Nice.
And it kind of all took off from there. And then eventually it grew to, 300 kids every couple, every quarter.
Wow.
Had contracts and keys to multiple private schools.
30 kids to 300 kids.
Yeah. I didn't spend one dime on marketing, other than my website, which I paid probably about $500 over 3 years to a high school kid who did it initially.
Right.
And then hit set up the new page and stuff. Then I eventually started doing that myself. But, that was it. That's and then awesome. It kind of went from there. But as time went on and it really blew up very well. We had 4 facilities going at each season. And it was just old school. Kids would come in, they would train. It was all stuff, no fluff.
Right.
We were going to focus on my Colonel Sanders secret recipe was.
Bert mentioned something really important here. Secret sauce. What is it that you bring to the table that's different, better, innovative, just challenges the status quo? That's what you need to bring to work, to the office, to your career, to your own company, whatever it is, that's what you get set apart by. It makes the difference between you and the next guy.
We're going to give you raw individual fundamental skills, small group competitive breakdowns, and 5-on-5 practical applications. And that's where we would kick our competition's ass because it's not about just doing the drill or going around the cone or whatever. Right. It's literally being held accountable and then being able to play, apply it. And so part of that was, you know, you have to earn the trust and respect of the audience. And so, you know, obviously my resume helped with that, but I used to say, I used to joke that every day that goes on, kids and parents will care less that I was at Georgia or whatever, and they never heard of Newberry College or whatever. It was about, what are you going to do Tuesday night from 7:30 to 9?
Yep.
That's all that meant
for me today.
And so one of my techniques was to always, you know, being in front of 50 kids, I would either make a mistake, a calculated mistake, or contradict myself to something that I'd said previously. And, you know, there's one kid that would call you out on it, you know? So the first thing is, what the hell's wrong with the rest of you? How come Fred is the only one that knows this?
Yep.
But then I'd get down and knock out like 25 or 50 pushups. And so by doing that as the leader, as the boss, it put every kid in the palm of my hand.
Right. Because you're showing accountability and you're holding yourself accountable right in front of the whole group.
100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yep.
And so, so when a kid, you know, is being stubborn and either can't do something or is stubborn and doesn't want to do something, and you give them 10 pushups, it's hard to bitch and complain about 10 pushups when the boss just did 50.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Well, and you're teaching that lesson of accountability, self-accountability, right? So instead of the bitching and complaining about, you know, the missed shot that he or she made, it's, oh, wait a minute, how can I do better? How can I do better next time? That's on me. I missed the shot.
You have to own it. You have to man up and own it. We have emasculated men in so many ways in our society, and we have, through inclusion or everyone gets a trophy or, you know, what I call misguided compassion with unintended consequences, we literally got to the point where the girls were becoming tougher and more resilient than the boys. Because right now in our society, making excuses, blaming others, and rationalizing one's mediocrity is a disease that is undermining everything.
And
we could have a million stories right now
of
examples of this through the business. I don't know if you want to go down those rabbit
Let's
holes.
Let's go down that road. Yeah. I mean, the you know, I've folks who listen, and you know, I've got my two daughters who are, you know, ending their college career, starting their, you know, careers. I was going to say business career, not necessarily, but, and you know, my concern for them is all their hard work. I mean, they've worked really, really hard to get where they are, and I feel like I've done a decent job at prepping them for that. But now it's 100% on them, right? It's they have to now choose and fight their battles in their careers, and it's not merit based. It's in most vast majority of situations.
But as a parent, as a coach, as a teacher, as a you know, leader of any kind, you want to empower people, not enable them. And so I think what's happened, and this ruffles a lot of feathers, but weak parenting has become our country's number one problem. If you look at all the root causes and manifestations, it goes back to that right there.
My girls, my wife, Marcia, they're tired of this, but I say it all the time, it's easy to be easy until it's hard. Right. So and that applies to a whole bunch of things, something we talked about before we even started recording the podcast. But, you know, feedback, like, so if you have a problem in the office, you got to attack that. You got to address that right away. If you let that go, it's going to be 100 times worse.
I used to tell my teams, we cannot win a championship until one of you guys finally has enough courage to punch somebody else in the face. So therefore, everything will get worked out and all the cards will go on the table, and then, yes, you'll have a bruised ego, but you guys become best friends. It always happens.
Yeah.
But until you get those underlying things and address the root cause, you can't get to that point. Now, you can't do that in the business world. You can't do that in schools. You can't do. Perfect. But you know what, though? The old saying is, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, what happens in a locker room stays in a locker room.
Right.
And there's a lot of things, you know, like, okay, playing college football. What's weird is, you don't even know half your teammates because there's a defensive field and there's an offensive field.
Right.
You know, so you're completely separate.
Yeah.
Your destiny is determined by people you don't even know.
Right.
Okay. But you know what? When 108 guys are showering naked together, like,
it's all out there.
Everything is out there. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's no hidden agendas. And
so whether it's the corporate world, the football field, the basketball court, or, you know, your kid at home who's, you know, young kid and they're sitting in front of an iPad for 6 hours a day, you know that's not the right thing, right? And it is harder to have them put down the iPad and spend more time and read a book or whatever that scenario is. It is harder. I get it. It is harder. But avoiding it, you know, that 5-year-old kid watching the iPad for six hours a day.
The price to pay is worse when you kick the can down the road.
When he's 10.
And we won't even go down the rabbit hole of what's going on in our country right now.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but
right.
It all manifests. Right. If I can kind of throw a parallel at you, yeah, of where I think we've gotten to in our country right now. So back when I was in college, and getting my degree in education, social sciences, with a minor in geography and a concentration in history, that was the quickest way to get 84 credits and graduate and get out of there. Okay, long title for nothing, and I never even used the degree. But at the time, the state of Maine, there was a 14-year-old kid who was, and I'm going to offend a lot of people here, and that's okay. I mean, this is part of our problem. We want to put feelings ahead of facts now. We can say things are not right or it shouldn't be that way, but then the reality of the situation is what it is, okay? And I've been described as a pessimist a lot throughout my life, but I'm really just an eternal pragmatist. At some point, you have to accept your situation for what it is, okay? I learned a lot of things. I learned what to do by being involved with and seeing what not to do.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I had a lot of bad coaches along the way.
Yeah. And I always say that, like, when I coach a lot of people, kind of like, you know, entry, mid-level career folks, because they're the most needing the help, right? And a lot of times I say, you think back in the roles you've had, you're learning from all of them. Oh, I hated that role, I hated that boss, or I hated that position, but you learned from it. Right?
If you can't take something away from a situation to grow from, then that's on you, not on them.
Exactly.
Because you can learn what to do from what by being exposed to what not to do.
Absolutely. And I do want to say, controversial. Yeah, probably controversial. You say a lot of things that probably could be controversial, but if you remember, you had a birthday recently,
yeah,
and Samantha, your girlfriend, sent out a message. I can't remember the system, the website, because it was really cool. It was a great idea.
It was amazing. Blew me away.
You know, hey guys, Bert's having a birthday. Would love for you to record, you know, something. And I really thought about it for a while. And my little recording, 30 seconds or whatever it was, you know, Bert's the kind of guy that's going to call you out on what you probably don't want to hear personally, but it's the right thing. And it stings a little bit, but it's the right thing. And that's the friend you want in your corner to call you out on, you know, hey, Todd, you don't like your job. What are you doing about it?
Right? Quit your bitching.
Right. Quit your bitching. What are you going
to
do about it?
So that goes to the story with my mother. And you know, we were estranged and I didn't talk to her again until I was 19. But at like 10 years old, I was playing in our town football league, had 10, 11, and 12-year-olds. And so this was like around the time of the divorce and stuff. And so my options were ride my bike like 3 or 4 miles, not a big deal, but at 10, that's, you know, on Lawrence Road with drunk drivers and stuff back in the 70s, that was in the, or 80s. Or, another one was try to bum a ride off someone else, which I didn't want to be a moocha. I didn't like that. Well, the third one was she would then come and drive, but I'd get dropped off to the field an hour early. Well, then the older kids who were in the same type of situation, little rough around the edges, would do wrestling moves on me and, right, you know, beat the snot out of me.
Right.
So this one time she's driving me, and I'm like, I'm crying in the back of the Chevy Nova going, oh my God, they're kicking the shit out of me. And she took a drag of her Marlboro Red and blew it out the window that was cracked 2 inches and turns around and says, quit your bitching. Even the Kennedys got problems. I paid $25. You're going, you know, and it sucked at the time, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And that has always stuck with me. So Shawshank Redemption, quit your, you know, get busy living or get busy dying, right. Quit your bitching or take some action. And so with that, I mean, that's where I think that we are going back to not to beat the dead horse, but we want to blame others, make excuses, and rationalize our mediocrity. And so for me, it started with being in college, bit of a non-traditional student because I was only a couple of years older than,
right.
But I had lived so many lives, you know, beyond that, had, you know, city miles, not just highway miles.
There's a massive difference between, you think back, a massive difference between a 20-year-old and a 22 or 23-year-old at that time of your life. Like 3 years is a big.
At that time, I was 22, 23, but yeah. I'd already lived in my car twice.
Right.
I had, you know, rationed while living in my car at the University of Texas in Austin. You know, I bought 40 meals for $176 over a full semester. How many meals do I ration that out? Okay. So when I go in there once and get my card punched once, I'm going to obviously eat lunch. I'm going to stay there and study and then eat dinner. So I get two for one.
Right.
Then I'm going to take a bunch of stuff and put it in my bag before I leave and not come back for a day or two.
Right.
So I just got like 3 days off of one meal punch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like that's struggle and that's how to figure things out. But at the time in college, there was, and I'd done some substitute teaching as well at that time, but they were pushing inclusion. Okay, inclusion, and it was mainstreaming kids with special needs into the general classroom. And at the time, it really stuck out because it was a heated, controversial thing in the news where there was a 14-year-old kid who was nonverbal, strapped to a board, and the mother was pushing for that kid to be in the mainstream classes in high school.
Wow.
Okay, so you look at the amount of resources it's going to take for that one kid.
Right.
Are they even going to get anything out of that situation? I understand the emotional toll on the mother, but that was huge for me. Like, but at what detriment to everybody else do we make concessions?
Right.
So, and I don't have the correct answer. I don't know what that is, you know, but it was definitely a debated issue, you know, while getting my degree. But then I can tell you that as getting into the business world and with my business, I definitely saw everyone gets a trophy.
Right.
And then I think that kind of manifest. And what happened with that is, you know, what's funny, because again, I'm a firm believer that everything happens within, there's a healthy balance in the universe. So for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. There are unintended consequences, so on and so forth. And so with everyone gets a trophy, it also drove away the kids that were better.
Right.
And those parents that said, well, we don't want to participate in that. We're going to go do some elite select travel situation.
All those groups started up.
And it started off harmlessly
as
a protest to everyone gets a trophy, a la communism, into we're going to go do this.
Yep.
Okay. But then as part of that, you then have to start keeping up with the Joneses. So the price point went through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
And then eventually what happened was everybody wanted to be a travel ball kid.
Right.
So now everyone plays. It's no longer a meritocracy. It's no longer about achievement. It's about, do you have the money? And the price point has gone through the roof.
Absolutely.
So when parents bitch and moan and complain about it, I say, well, you're the most culpable and influential entity in this process because you provide the means of production.
I saw that when this is many years ago, but when my girls were playing soccer, you know, the same thing was happening, right? We had the rec league, whatever. And it was great for years. It was huge in town, like multiple fields, dozens and dozens of teams. But then that happened, right? We had some really good players and they had, you know, the travel league. And all of a sudden you started to see that migration. All the quote unquote good players went to the travel league. And then the travel league got full and all of a sudden there was a B travel league now too. And you were like, oh, wait a minute, hold on now.
Right.
So there's an A league and a B league now. And then there was tryouts, but miraculously everyone made a team, whether it was A or B.
Yeah, as long as you had $500.
Right.
Yeah.
Or 1,000 or whatever it was. I mean, it started getting super expensive.
Cheerleading is the worst one out there. Okay.
That, yeah.
Well, first of all, I don't believe, I mean, they are athletes. So the stuff that they do is exceptional. However, I struggle with the concept of it being a sport when you don't have a competitor, an opponent to go up against, and it's judged. That's my issue.
Been there, done that.
But to spend $10,000 on competitive cheerleading, and then you go to the competitions, I guess everyone gets to go to nationals, and then they have like 17 different divisions for each, you know, or 26 letters of levels within each age group. So therefore you can have 26 national champions for 11U.
I was a national champion. So was I.
Exactly. I mean, the one that really hit me was there was a 9U girls basketball team from our county here that went to the nationals. I'm sorry, they were 10 years old, went to the nationals in Orlando. But there were only 9 teams competing in the national tournament, and 5 of them were from this county.
Oh,
okay, give me a break.
Yeah.
But it's like the line from Seinfeld. You know, hey Jerry, it's not a lie if you believe it. So therefore, everyone gets a trophy. Now there's no longer travel, is no longer about achievement. So therefore, but you can put it on Facebook and Instasham and whatever else, and you are a superstar, right? Yeah. And then it kind of turned into everyone should be able to own a home. We saw what happened with that, mm-hmm. right? Because the government took away predatory lenders, and we're going to make the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac the lenders. But then what happened? We lowered the standards of who could get a home, and look what happened. Sometimes there's a reason that we have to have standards and expectations. Then it turned into everyone should be able to go to college. Well, then now we have the full circle unintended consequences. People, and I have zero sympathy for people who took out tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans right. when I was living in my car eating a can of baked beans and a loaf of bread yeah. for $1.50 sitting on a park bench.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they get a degree in some
underwater basket weaving or whatever.
Some made up yeah. thing that sounds great on a college campus, yeah. but has no practical application, or even things that are very admirable and have tremendous practical applications. Let's go with a teacher, elementary school or middle school, high school teacher, or a nurse. You know, when you're coming out, basically what you're going to get paid.
Yeah.
Okay. So why would you go to Harvard and spend $200,000
to be a teacher,
to teach elementary school?
Right.
When you can go to a state school for a fraction of the cost, or even a JUCO for 2 years, and then go to University of Georgia or wherever, and then get the degree from there. No one's ever going to check to know where you went for your freshman, sophomore
you
years.
Said it before, you know, it's keep up with the Joneses, right? You know, Jane goes to you know, state school.
So we keep perpetuating
my son goes to Harvard. Well,
or how about the ones that the ones who have their athlete, they're going to go play a sport somewhere in college, and they have a signing. Oh, so and so signed. Well, there's no athletic scholarship in Division III.
Exactly.
So what they sign? What they sign their housing form.
Right.
They sign their FAFSA. What do they sign?
I love that.
Okay.
I do the same
like,
thing.
But think about it though. So, but systemically now, you have high school athletic directors and principals that are sitting there with a big old shit-eating grin on their face, going, "Look at me. Look at all the athletes we have in my school that's going on to play in college, and they're getting scholarships." Well, they're not getting scholarships. That's
right.
A lie.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so it's phony achievement.
Yep.
Followed by phony victimization, because nobody wants to be the bad guy and say, no. How do you spell I love you? N-O. And nobody wants to say no. So now we have kids who have become nothing more than an accessory to the life of the parent, and the parent wants the biggest house, the fastest car, the shiniest diamond, the biggest set of fake boobs, or whatever it is, whatever the thing is, stand in line for, you know, 18 hours to get the first iPhone that comes out. You know,
yeah.
back in whatever that was, 07-ish maybe.
Like that, yeah.
I mean, Coach, I can't work tomorrow. Why? Well, I got to go stand in line with my iPhone. What the hell's an iPhone? we got to work tomorrow, you know? You're a high school sophomore, and I'm paying you $18 an hour.
Right.
You know?
You get a $1,000 device. How is this possible?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. To take attendance, count basketballs, and walk a kid to the, you know, ice machine if he gets hurt. But that's where we're going. And so nobody wants to say no. And so where are we going with all this? I think that at the end of the day, my thing for kids is to find your passion. The old saying was, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I met a guy recently. And I did believe that for the longest time. I said, hey, I'm the richest, luckiest guy on the planet. I get to hang out and play hoops like I did when I was 12 years old, except now I don't have to make a bunch of phone calls and go knock on a bunch of doors, because people would just go to the website, which I paid nothing for, you know, and they would just miraculously either mail me checks or swipe a credit card or whatever, right? And so, and I actually fought that one for a number of years. I had a wicked cheap website that was
right.
done by a high school junior from Athens, Georgia. And so we did not accept credit card payments. And I had people that were pissed because they couldn't pay by credit card because they wanted to get the points.
Right.
And then when I went and switched over, I said, but if I do that, you're gonna have to pay processing fees, because I gotta pay processing fees, right?
Right?
And so, and people, you know, but then complain about the processing fee. But I'm like, well, you can just write a check.
Right.
It'll save you $50.
Right.
But they would rather get the points. So they wanted to bitch, complain, spend an hour on the phone, still end up paying it. It just baffles me.
So I think there's a couple, there's 1,000 lessons here, but part of some of it, let me try to sum up here. There's the the struggle and the work hard. You can't substitute that. There is no substitute for hard work. You can't shortcut that, right? And you've done all that. There's the self-accountability, if that's the right word, right? You have to hold yourself accountable. Business, life, whatever you want out of life is what you put into life. And you said you made the list. I call it a Ben Franklin. Whenever I'm making a big decision, I think it was Ben Franklin. It was kind of the pros on one side, the cons on the other.
Yeah.
Or a T-chart is the other name for it.
Sure.
Right? I do those all the time, right? And it's one of those things that it's helped me in my life tremendously because it gets it all out. And you can get it kind of
see. Yeah, but we still make sometimes stupid decisions because there might be 100 things on one
right,
side
right.
and only 2 things on the other. But
two are really
two,
big.
Two, yeah, exactly. You
really
know?
Big, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other is, I think the other thing to try to sum up the last part, which is, live your own life. Right? Don't worry about the Joneses. Don't worry about keeping up with someone else. Don't worry about what school they went to, what car they drive, what house they live in, whether they got a scholarship or not a scholarship. Who cares?
Your story is unique to you. Your reality is in many ways controlled by you.
Yes.
We have removed meritocracy. We no longer accountability has become a four-letter word. Okay, so like the four things I make decisions and how I live my life: attitude, effort, accountability, and performance. So there's four things that I use that I try to teach, preach, and help me with decisions and basically just day to day life. And that is your attitude, effort, accountability, which has become a four letter word in our society, and your performance. The first three we have complete control over, I feel like.
Yep.
And so, with my business there, as time it built up, it grew very quickly and was great. However, I still lived well within my means. I didn't go out and buy a new Corvette, and I did get a used Harley Davidson Ultra Classic, which I'd been riding, for about 10 years. And that was the dream. And my old man had one growing up. And so that was kind of my thing there. But then,
not like a huge, not like you bought a, 10,000 square foot mansion. I mean, it's, it's a reasonable investment for your hobby.
Yeah. And I've had it for what? I've had it for 14 more years. So I look at it this way. I look at it, the amount of miles that I put on it, and I divide that by what I spent on it. And so it's been
bucks.
Totally worth it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's the enjoyment of, I just sold my motorcycle a couple of years ago, but just, if you haven't ever ridden a motorcycle or enjoyed one, it changes your attitude real quick when you get out there on the open road. That's all I can say.
And so I went and picked up my girl two summers ago. We did 19 states, 14,000 miles. I definitely get my money's worth out of that. No, it was great. Oh, you back your ass.
yeah, that's true.
But,
So,
because I know you wanted to kind of get into where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And so the basketball thing was very good. It kind of really took off. And then we started to get cannibalized by our own success. So we literally took kids that were either never made a middle school team,
right,
that then would go on to play in high school and have a varsity career. And some even did sign actual scholarships to play in college. And so you would think that those high school coaches would have been calling, backing up my tree saying,
right,
dude, you took my chicken shit and, actually did pretty well. What can happen if you take my chicken salad?
Right.
And, but the reverse occurred. So what I found was, the kid that would come to me who got cut, let's say, and we had kids that were legit players and some of the better players in their area, but we mixed them together.
Right.
But I would then separate them once they got to the gym, basically on, you top 11 go to that basket,
yep,
and then divide them that way. But anyway, because the disparity between the supposed superstars and the average Joes was not a huge disparity anyway.
Okay.
And so, but the average Joe, once that kid then starts to get it, starts to close the gap a little bit, get some confidence. Well, then there's some ball dude with a card that says, oh, I love your kid.
Yeah.
You need to come now. You need to come play and do this.
Cha-ching.
And I used to talk to that parent and say, wait a second. If I was a stockbroker or a financial planner or whatever, and I just gave you a massive return on investment.
Right.
Would you take your money out and just go to the next guy on the street that said, hey, I got the next best thing for you over here? Or would you put more money in with the guy that just gave you the huge return on investment?
Yep.
You know, and then what sadly was, I started getting cannibalized within that method. And again, I get it. Every parent wants to be told, I love your
superstar.
Kid. Your yeah. kid's a, you know, I see the potential. Yada, yada. Yeah, but you didn't see where the kid was 6 months ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Where was that scumbag 6 months ago who wouldn't even look at you and give you the time of day? Okay. But what really kind of drove a stake in the heart was when public high school coaches started copying and stealing the stuff that we were doing.
They were running their own camps.
Or parents who would come there and sit there and say, oh my God, you're the greatest thing in the world. Thank you so much. Bah, 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 bah. And then next thing you know, they recruit 10 other kids to leave my program to go play travel with him because he hired a black guy. And now all the rich white kids from the burbs want to play for a black guy. And then they go and anyone can just buy their way into travel ball. And they call themselves the elite or the select whatever and go get overpriced Premier. Uniforms, sneakers, all the stuff that has nothing to do with help adding value to your kid. And so that, as well as even places that we were renting space from in either city or county facilities and rec departments that would then create programming, copying our programming, and then not rent to us.
Right.
You know, so it was, I was bitter there for a while. I mean, it sucked. And as part of, while that was kind of all going on, it's so very convoluted, I would have parents call me and say, listen, you've been the best thing that's ever happened to my kid. I got other kids that do other activities. Like, your stuff rocks. It just makes sense. And that was my whole thing with the kids is that you were always welcome to question authority. If I'm teaching you something and you question authority, I should be able to very easily, quickly, and concisely defend or explain, or I have to question why we're teaching that.
Right.
Okay. And that takes a lot of self-esteem and confidence to stand by what you're doing. But again, when I'm willing to get down and knock out, you know, 50 push-ups or 200 push-ups in a night,
right,
for different things, then it kind of makes it very easy. But anyway, but when those parents would say, you're by far the best thing that's ever happened to my kid, yada, yada, yada. But if I don't go pay this guy who's working with the high school coach, my kid's not going to play high school ball.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's fool's gold, because your kid's going to be a 5'10" to 6'2" average Joe. That coach is going to bring in a 6'5", 6'6" kid, and you're going to pay all the way. And so now that's why you have 19 kids on high school basketball teams
sitting the bench,
but they're all paying $1,100 also.
Right.
So that public school high school coach is making 50 grand on the side.
Wow.
You know, so it was very bitter for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I in 2011, I found a cheap lake house, that it kept dropping. It was originally listed for 400. I ended up buying it for 167.
Wow.
I remodeled the old part myself. In 2013, I put a 2,000 square foot addition on with a guy that kind of owed me some money and was a customer. And we did some stuff together, in investing with real estate. And then from there, again, as the basketball was just continuing to slide, and there's nothing proprietary. I mean, there's nothing I can really do about it, you know?
You can't sue anybody.
Yeah, you can't sue. You know, it's, I mean, and I had guys literally who would take stuff off my website or literally take and then just, it was the exact same thing word for word, but they took my logo off.
Cut and paste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I then started buying some very cheap houses in a great zip code. And I would, you know, buy a 3-bed, 2-bath house for 130 grand, rip out the carpet, put in granite countertops, new sinks, paint the place, pressure wash it, you know, just cosmetic type stuff. And then
rent it out. Yeah.
You know, and I was getting maybe 25-30% more than the market was in that one little enclave, but because I cleaned it up, made it nice, and I marketed it to people that were overpaying 15 miles down the road. Why would you live in a 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment, right, living like a gerbil, when you can have a freestanding home 15 minutes up the road?
Yep.
And so I eventually bought 5 of those. And what I would do is, so the money that was still coming in from basketball, I would live very meagerly, very well below my means, take that money, pay off my home equity line, because I buy the houses in cash. So they didn't give me the houses. And this was from I bought my first one in 2015. And the last one that I bought was in 2019, right after Christmas, which was four blocks from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That's a whole nother story right there. But as I was putting this stuff on Facebook and turning these houses over and getting renters, I literally had guys calling me who said, yeah, I know I screwed you over in basketball a couple of years ago, but I know what kind of guy you are and how you operate, and I want to invest with you. And I was like, I ain't proud. I'll take your money.
Right.
And so then I went and got my real estate license. I took a 12-day course and knocked that out, 75 hours in 12 days.
Kind of like that summer with that 84 credits or whatever it was.
84 credits in 2 years. Yeah,
same thing.
Well, it's when there's so many things in the world right now, and social media has changed so much to where there's so many reasons or ways to question yourself, to overthink things, right? Paralysis by analysis and so on and so forth. But again, if you're willing to bet on yourself, like the analogy I've always used is, with kids, you can dip your toe out the side of a plane, you know. You can dip your toe in a pool to see what the water feels like. Ooh, it's cold, right? But you can't dip your toe out the side of a plane right. to see what it's gonna feel like.
Right.
You're just gonna make the sign of the cross, yell Geronimo, and jump.
Oh, right.
Right. And so so once you do make a decision, you're gonna go and you're gonna put your ass on the line and your personal brand on the line and refuse to accept mediocrity.
And you know, when you do that, when you do that, you know, you've made that decision, you're passionate about it because you're committing, you're jumping out of that plane, right? Hopefully you've got a backpack out there.
The Chandler Bing. I hope this parachute's not a knapsack.
Right. But a lot of people are going through that, particularly right now. I was going to say post-COVID. It's not really post-COVID. It's kind of in COVID, but the whole resignation event that's happening, right? This whole, you hear a lot about it. And I actually...
It's a remanifestation of the old country song, take this job and shove it.
Right.
That's all it is.
Yeah. Like, hey, I don't have
Again,
to
it's
this.
Constant balance. The universe is a constant balance.
Totally agree.
But right now, here's... We went wrong, though, with the Kardashians. I firmly believe it comes down to the Kardashians. So reality TV, and so now you had average Joes that were now ordained celebrities,
right,
or influencers, you know, and everything. Well, I mean, okay, YouTube is a phenomenal thing. I love me some YouTube, right? I'm a firm believer there should be no more stupid people on the planet. Between Google and YouTube, there should be no more stupid people. Totally. However, you still have to vet the people you're listening to.
Totally agree.
Okay? Absolutely. Cross-reference at least.
If you're looking at how to like fix your computer or something, you got to look at a couple YouTube videos. You don't just go with the first
one. At least get three.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You know, like there's one, there's two, and there's probably something in the middle, right? And you have to put it through your own, you know,
BS
bullshit
filter.
Meter, yeah, exactly. You know, and figure out this. But with the Kardashians, it's turned everybody into thinking that they deserve. Like, I don't believe we deserve anything. Okay, you work for things. Some people are skilled and talented, and they don't have to work very hard. Like the old saying is, "Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard."
Yeah.
True. Okay, that can happen at times. But when skilled or talented works hard, then hard work ain't going to beat that.
Right.
Okay. At the end of the day, you're still going to recruit the 6'5 athletic guy over the 6 foot non-athletic guy most times.
Yeah.
Okay. But with the Kardashians, everyone now thinks that they deserve to have a lifestyle without paying their dues or having the means to even have that. When college kids complain to me or would come to me wanting a raise, and you're holding a $5 Starbucks, okay? You're living in a swanky apartment and not at home or whatever. You know, I have a hard time. There's a difference between need and want.
I'll tell you a quick corporate story. I had one of the best negotiation results in my career because of Coach Leather. So let me explain. I'm not going to name any corporate names. If there's anyone who's listening to this who knows the role, I'm sure you'll remember this. flew out. We were contract negotiation. I was working for a big Fortune 100 company. We're working with our vendor. Flew out as we were having corporate negotiations. Flew out to their headquarters. Got to sit in their executive round table. Their executive conference room. Beautiful, you know, typical.
So like, you sat up straight there. Elbows are not on the table. You sat up straight. Absolutely.
Suit and tie. You know, the movie theater along, you know, 20 some odd foot table, mahogany, I have no idea what it was, but, you know, beautiful table and leather, black leather chairs circling it. And I was early, you know, I'm that kind of guy, you know, I'm not going to be 5 minutes late. I'm not going to be on time. I'm going to be 5 or 10 minutes early. So I'm early. And the admin, you know, sat me down in the executive round table or table. And I'm kind of getting my stuff around. And one of the chairs, like, sort of right next to me to my left, just spun around slowly. And I noticed on the back of the chair, it said Coach Leather. And by chance, my wife and I had been in New York City like the weekend before, and she wanted a Coach Leather pocketbook, which was probably about 6 inches by 4 inches. And it was literally like a $200, you can't call it a pocketbook. It was like slightly bigger than a wallet, right? With a strap. And I'm like, I just can't justify that purchase. I just can't. It was $200 for something like just a hair bigger than my wallet. My whole philosophy in life is, listen, if the wallet costs more than what's in it, you should not buy it. Like, that's a problem. But I look at my Coach Leather. I didn't really know what Coach Leather was. And I looked around and I counted. There was 16 chairs. And I'm thinking to myself, if the little pocketbook was $200.
24 times 2 square inches.
So by chance, you know, everyone comes in, we've got the rest of my team and the rest of this vendor. And we start talking about, you know, hey, we're here to contract negotiations, and immediately went to price. And I couldn't resist. And I said, hey, I just got to say, you know, you're pushing us that you can't bend on price and, you know, but your financials, because, you know, of course you do your homework, they're a public company, boom, boom, sure, boom, they're doing pretty well. And I happened to just spin the same chair to my left around. And I said, I just happened to be in New York City. And I put my arm around the chair and I looked at the executive, and I could see that they knew where I was going with this. I had my chair around, my arm around the chair. Yep. I started to talk about how I was just in New York City with my wife, and she wanted, and I explained the whole story I just told you. And I said, if that wallet pocketbook thing was $200, can you imagine what these chairs must cost? So I'm not really feeling too bad about your financial situation that you're trying to explain to me between your 10K report, which is, you know, the public filing of what their profits were and all that stuff, and clearly this luxury conference room. And anyway, it totally deflated their position, and it turned out to be one of the best negotiations of my whole career, all because my wife wanted a Coach Leather pocketbook thing that, yeah, was like too cheap to buy, basically.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good stuff. I once had an athletic director come in my office and close the door, sit down, and I'm thinking,
oh, that can't be
again, good. What did I do? Who did, right, I say? What to? And he goes, you want to tell me what you've been up to? And at one of the schools I was at, I think our phones were bugged. Okay. And basically the gist of the conversation was, how are you able to save the budget so much money compared to the people that have been in this position before you? And I was like, I don't know. I just, you know, I
treat it like my money.
I only spend it on what I think we need or what I'm told we have to have. I try to negotiate where I can, you know, yada, yada, yada. And that's it. And then by the end of the conversation, I was like, I'll tell you what then. Because at the time I was only making like 24 grand a year.
Right.
Right. And I was like, I'll tell you what then. So don't pay me a salary and just give me a percentage of all this money that I've been saving the budget. And just incentivize me even more with that.
Right.
You start laughing. That's a great idea. I can't do that. Like,
that's a good idea. You should, though.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other thing in the corporate world. Like, you know, you see these folks and it's like, you know, they go on a business trip and they're going to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and they're staying at the W and I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm not asking to eat at McDonald's and stay at, you know, the hotel or Motel 8 or whatever. I'm not asking to do that. But like, if this was your money and you were taking your family on vacation, would you eat there? Would you stay there? And would you, you know, yeah, take a limo to the airport? You probably would.
So here's the thing in entitlement. So in college basketball, we would have a party of 30 to 35 when we traveled. Right. Okay. We would go to a Ruth's Chris Steakhouse or a Morton's or whatever. And you'd have guys walk out of there, like, first of all, on the bus. Now, I would always have the itinerary down to a minute. So from the time we had practice on campus to then getting onto the bus, flight, landing, every meal, every meeting, everything was done on that trip. Which over, you know, a two-night, three-day trip wasn't too bad. 14 days in three countries in Europe, that was a little tougher, you know. I don't know how long the drive is, you know, to Vevey, Switzerland from Lyon, France, you know. This was kind of like before GPS too, in many ways. But anyway, but you'd have guys walk out and be like, oh yeah, that was terrible. My steak was awful. But they'd be like, dude, when I was recruiting you a year ago, like you just ate more value of food in this one meal than you would have in a week where you came from.
Right.
You know? And so there was entitlement there. Like this I've been screwed and the system owes me.
Right.
You know? And some of those kids came from literally generational welfare, single parent families, all nine yards. Then when I got into the basketball business in the burbs out here, and you have kids coming from double college, double income families,
right.
You know, and then you get the, do you know who I am? Do you know what I drive? Do you know where I live? Do you know who my brother-in-law is? I don't care. Get your ass in the back of the line.
Right.
You know? Like, so the entitlement was 100 times worse with this. And I catch a lot of grief for, again, saying that weak parenting is our country's biggest problem. But I would have, it all stems from a zillion case studies of where parents would come to me asking for advice on stuff. And the one that really kind of stuck out very early on in the business was guy, very successful college player, had a minor contract in the NBA, but didn't really make it, but rubbed elbows with pretty high profile guys. And was frustrated with his seventh grade kid who got cut, came to me, got him over the hump, was a starter on the eighth grade team the next year, okay? Went on to go play high school and then played in college. But he was like, he struggled with trying to get his kid to understand or have grit. And if you, like, there's a great TED Talk on grit.
Yeah.
Just from an Asian, book. Is an Asian female educator.
Yeah, it's a great book called Grit.
Yeah.
Can't remember her name. But the TED Talk is a great summary of that.
Good
book.
Snippet. Yep, it's great.
Yeah.
And that's when we talk about struggle. Like that's where more people. So I came up, and this was before even I think that TED Talk came out. This was probably 2008, maybe. But the answer I gave to him was that your kid does not know your reality. He doesn't know any of your struggles. Doesn't know any of the perseverance and discipline it took. All he knows is he lives in $1 million house. In a guarded, gated community where he wants for nothing.
Yep. So that's his baseline, right?
That's his baseline. That's his reality.
Right.
That's not your reality.
Exactly.
So you're looking at him through your lens.
Why isn't he working hard?
Why isn't he tough? Why isn't he? Right. How come he doesn't get pissed off on the court? Well, because you tell him to yes, sir, no, ma'am. You know, you send him to cotillion. You pay someone to teach your kid manners or whatever, right?
Right.
And so my thing was, go buy a 22-inch push lawnmower. Don't even put gas in it. Just, I know you have a gardener or whatever. Just make him go make the friggin' lines up and down on the lawn before you buy him the next video game.
Right.
You know? And the whole point was, and I used that point many other times in different talks, but you have to, as parents, you should be empowering your kids, not enabling your kids. And no, I don't care what socioeconomic background you have, racial background, whatever. Give me a strong-willed, single, poor, black grandmother, and she will get shit done, okay? Yeah, she will keep shit in line, and she will get shit done, okay? You've seen it a million times. Yeah. But
there's a great book that actually I read in my early to mid-20s. Well, I was out of college, so I must have been mid-20s, and it's called The Millionaire Next Door. And it talks about, it's a great book. It's a little dry in the middle, gets a little statistical, but it talks about why there's mostly first generation millionaires and very few second or third generation millionaires.
Right, because the inheritance just gets pissed away, whereas the ones that work for it.
Well, because of the point you just brought up is, and there's a couple of things that happen, but the first is the second generation, third or whatever, doesn't have that struggle, doesn't understand that value and why, what they didn't have and they now have. The second thing that happens in reverse is kind of back to your point on the parental challenge, right? Is the struggle that that first generation went through, subconsciously, they don't want that second generation to go through. I worked really hard. I slept in my car. I paid for my own college. I. And subconsciously, like, well, I'll just, you know, I'll send them to the best schools because I want them to get the education. I'll do this for them to get them set up.
But that's the unintended consequence of over-enthusiastic compassion.
Exactly.
Like, we grew up in a generation where every decision in the household was made based on money. We were blue collar. Yes. You know, you had bologna and cheese with two swirls of mustard sandwiches that stuck to the roof of your mouth. Yeah. You know, whatever. You know, at 11 years old, I learned to cook my own meals, wash my own clothes, ride my bike to games and practices. I never had a curfew. I never had homework check. Okay. You know, when I rode my bike down the road to Lawrence, Mass, and parents were like, okay, we probably need to get involved here and help this kid out. You know, plus I was good. I could play. So there was an investment.
Right,
there was an
incentive. We want him here at the game.
We want him to be here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I had a great coach. I got stuck on the B team that first year, which was great for me because I didn't have a dad who was influential in the church,
right,
or involved.
Right.
And so I would play half the kids on that team. I'd play some of them 2-1, 3-1, and kick their ass. But I didn't make that A team.
You okay? Didn't have that inside.
But we played in the same league.
Right.
We beat them once during the year, and we lost to them in the championship by 3 points. You know, so it was all good stuff. Mark Roth was the coach, a great guy, and still in touch with him now. But, you know, going back to what was that? The grit and the they have to create their own environment, and parents need to almost self-impose types of adversity.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
I agree.
And
so there's learning. So there's, you know, and because you can't just tell someone, hey, you need to work harder. Here's why. It doesn't work. You got to show them. And this is applicable to children or in business. You're running teams, leading teams. You can't just set everyone up for success. That sounds terrible the way I said that. But what you have to do is let them struggle and learn so that they are invested and get it and have more kind of, you know, skin in the game, whether it's a kid growing up playing basketball or whether it's in the corporate world and you're trying to build a great team that's a high-performance team. It's the same thing.
The way the world is right now, if you had to go back and look at it all over again, like our parents, my old man was a truck driver. He was a Teamster. So the thought process was get with a good company,
right,
and just work your ass off, pay your dues and move your way up. Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that works today. Okay. Because I know a lot of guys in my business from the basketball business that would then call to reach out to say, hey, you know, can you help us out financially? We're having a hard time. Well, I lost my job. So there was a lot of 50-year-old type guys that got downsized, let go, whatever term, early retirement or whatever. And then I would say, well, but wait, I also know you have a daughter you're paying $5,000 for. So my $10.90 an hour charge of $550 is where you're going to try to like trim the fat,
right,
but not the $5,000 volleyball.
Right.
You know, like whatever. And I got burned a few times on some of those deals, but that's okay. But anyway, so transition for me. So I know we can't do this forever, but so with the rental stuff and with the real estate stuff, it was again, I'm
more controlled by you.
You know, the whole thing was, and so I reconnected with Samantha in the last couple of years, who was my girlfriend who moved away 2 days after fifth grade. And then we spoke very briefly in 2006, but then, you know, never saw each other or anything, just talked, blah, 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 and then reconnected a couple of years ago. And so, it's amazing. There's a lot of other tangents to that, but, and so she just moved here. Her youngest, she's got three boys and her youngest just graduated high school. And so she moved here 3 weeks ago. And so she has a degree in finance and computer information systems. So she could go get a job making 75 to 100 grand probably. But it doesn't give us the lifestyle that we want to make up for the time that we've missed,
right,
in a way. And so what we're really trying to do is just still keep basketball going a little bit on a very limited basis. But then we got the five rental houses plus the house in Atlanta that we bought, was going to do Airbnb with. Then COVID came, then the shooting at the Wendy's came. And then it's been sitting there now for 18 months, but I think we're going to ready to get that up and going. I just flipped a house, another house on the lake. I basically flipped it, but I bought it, already had a buyer for it at a much higher price, and I'm selling it, but I'm taking a sliver of land that I want for my property. It's next door to my house. Oh, nice. So I'm fighting with the county and the surveyor on that to get that done. But so that's another, again, you can be sustained on just crumbs.
Right.
Okay. And so I think the biggest thing, the way the world is changing now, is to put all your eggs in one basket and be leveraged or dependent by, and there are agents. I'd had an agent call me. He's been in the business for 20 plus years. Okay. He's done over $250 million in his career. And he's calling me about, is this 2-bedroom, 1-bath house worth it to buy and hold on to and rent? And I was like, wait a second.
You've been in the business forever.
You're the expert. Yeah, what are you calling me for? You know, I'm just an average public school, state school mutt from the other side of the tracks, you know? But time is the most precious commodity on earth. So for Samantha and I, it's about how do we have dominion over our life, our schedule, our time, and have freedom of choice to make it work. Now, a big part of that is live well within your means.
Yep.
Number one. Number two is when the shit hits the fan, then you roll up your sleeves and you get down to it. So I just had to throw a tenant out of a friend. It was a friend of mine. It was two sons and a fiance and a baby. Nothing. But no, they were paying. And this is I've always said, integrity is a very lonely place. Okay, because you're always going to be constantly let down by other people.
Okay, so you had to kick someone out of your rental. Listen, if you're going to be your own boss, you're going to have to do the hard work. You're the boss now. You can't just pass it along to someone else up the chain. You are the top of the chain. Be prepared to do the hard stuff.
Things that came up and whatever over 5 months.
Yeah.
Okay, then they asked for... they had two pets, and then one of the pets wasn't going to come. So could they get part of their deposit back? Sure, no problem. Take it off next month's rent. No big deal. Yet the next two times I show up to the house, you have a second pet there now. Okay, so that's an honesty issue.
Right.
It's an integrity issue. Doesn't fly with me.
Yeah.
And then there was an issue that something needed to be done. I was out of town. I have a guy who I've done some deals with. I've gotten him a bunch of jobs. So, right. So I can have the luxury and leverage my time,
right,
that when something does come up, I can call this guy and he'll go and take care of it for me, even when I'm on a motorcycle up on the Canadian border.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So, and then he gets there at 6 p.m. and she won't let him in the house because the baby has to take a nap. Well, he's changing a faucet. He doesn't even need power tools, right, and he'll be there for 20 minutes. Now, most tenants would say, oh my gosh, thank you so much for coming, even right, at the end of your long day, to be here at 6 o'clock and to fix our problem.
I want running water, so yeah, I want you here. Yeah.
Exactly, right? And yeah. So that was the kicker for me. That was, so I executed the early termination clause and told him you have 30 days.
There's no, you can do that any, there's no specific criteria. You can do it anytime.
There's the Georgia Association of Realtors standard form has a early termination landlord clause, right, in it, which I explain this thoroughly.
Right.
You know, because my things are, you got to pay the rent. You got to pay the rent on time.
Yep.
You got to
take care of
you got to take care of the place and return it in the condition that you received it in.
Right.
Okay. And I'm a zero drama guy. Like, your issues are your issues. They're not my issues.
Right.
And so you will never hear me complain about my issues to you.
Right.
So I don't want to hear your issues complain to me. And so, and foolishly, I called the parent who I'm friends with to tell them these things in advance, 2 weeks before. Then all of a sudden I can start getting all the hate emails and the, you know, expletives and everything else about what a bad guy I am.
Right.
But what would a good parent have done when you get that call from the friend who's also the landlord? That parent should have hung up the phone, then made another phone call to say,
get your act
go freaking cut the grass, go get rid of that other animal, or ask to give a greater deposit,
right,
and let the guy in to fix the leaky faucet.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And so, but we want to be liked, not respected.
Right. That's a hard thing, right? Like, to know that decision.
It's not a hard thing. It just takes a lot of work.
True.
Okay.
True.
My thing was, I always wanted to explain the why.
Right.
Okay. And it's a pain in the ass. Right. Okay. I'm the boss. You're not.
Right.
I'm the parent. You're the kid. You should be able to say, boom, decision final. That's it. Okay. That's not the way the world works.
Right.
So, you know, as a coach, I hated having to discipline players and get them up in the morning and run at 6 o'clock in the morning, especially in Boston traffic, when that meant I had to get up at 4 o'clock to drive in to beat the traffic, to be there at six, to run the kid who screwed up. Well, really, who's punished? I'm more punished than they are.
Right.
Right. So what would I do a lot of times? I'd run with them.
Right. Might as well. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Which was a funny story. We do preseason conditioning. And so there was a reservoir in Brookline, Mass. And it was a mile loop. And so you had to run the loop twice.
2 miles. Yeah.
2 miles. And you had to do it in 12 minutes. Ooh. If you were a post player, you got an extra 30 seconds. Okay. And so I ran it with my players. Okay. And so I was the only one to make it with the first year. Right. And so this kid, Tavares Campbell, comes to me from Waterbury, Connecticut. And he comes in to protest that this was a racially discriminatory exercise.
Okay.
And his whole point was, coach, this isn't right because everyone knows black guys run faster and jump higher and white guys can run distance. And I said, okay. I said, but Tavares, you understand that the best marathon runners in the world right now are Kenyans, right, and half of them don't even wear shoes. Exactly. I'll see your ass at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Because if you didn't make the run, you had to get up at 6 o'clock every morning for the next 2 weeks or until you made the run.
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, that was a funny one. That was a good one.
That one backfired on him.
Yeah.
Wow.
But as far as the real estate stuff now, so yeah, it's like, I think less is more, right. You know? Like when the basketball business got really big, it just became more moving parts and all that. And I was still there every night on the court,
right,
and loved it. And again, I used to say I was the richest, luckiest guy on the planet because I got to do something that I loved. It kept me young.
Got paid for it.
You know, like I think that the most perceptive things in this world are kids and pets.
Yeah.
You know, so people to hang out with wise ass middle school and high school kids from like fifth grade through ninth grade. How can you not have fun with that? Even though I'm not a parent, one of my advices to parents are, or dealing with kids, is just be 10% better at whatever they're giving you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so it kind of works, you know, and I was substitute teaching once, or a long-term sub position once. And, when I graduated in December 94, the school I was coaching high school basketball at, there was a teacher that was having a baby. So I got her job. I taught two sections of political philosophy and two sections of love, marriage, and relationships, which my girlfriend at the time was like, you're like the least qualified person in the world to teach that class. And then one of them was Islam. I had to teach Islam to redneck Western Maine Mountain paper mill.
Wow.
Kids, blue collar kids. And so what I did was I knew nothing about Islam at the time. Obviously pre 9/11. I really had very little interest in it. It didn't really apply to me in Rumford, Mexico, Maine. Okay. Rumford, Mexico. Well, in Maine, every great rivalry is separated by a river with a paper mill. So it's really two towns, really one kind of thing. And so there were five chapters in the book. There were 25 kids in the class. I said, so I owned up to it. I manned up to it. I exposed my vulnerability, okay? And I said, I have zero interest in teaching this, but I need a paycheck. And so I'm going to teach it, and you're going to learn it.
Right.
Because I need this paycheck.
Right.
And I said, what are some of the things you would like to learn about Islam? And, of course, you have, you know, thank goodness, you always have some kids that are like on the ball and get it. And well, we should probably learn about the history. I wrote history on the board.
Right.
And someone said, well, we should probably study where like it actually people, you know, doing it. Okay. Geography. Boom. So next thing you know, I wrote down everything that I would have had to teach them anyway. Right. But it all came from them. Right. And then what I did was I said, I'll tell you what, I want you all to get into five groups. Okay. And these are the people you're going to work with over the next, whatever it was, semester or whatever. And, so they did. I thought that was cool and everything. And then what I did is I assigned them each a chapter in the book. And then I came up with a format where they had to come up with questions. They had to have a pop quiz. They had to have questions that were submitted for the final exam and everything. And then they were each given like art, music, dance, clothes, something like that went along with their chapters as well. And so for the final, they also got an extra 5 points in the final if they if they came up and grew up. So I pulled up to this high school that, which coincidentally, I'm in the back, it's where I did my student teaching in the first, so in the fall of 94, I did my student teaching there. And it was a really rough reputation. And literally, as I was walking up the stairs of the school, the doors went flying open with four cops using a kid's head, opening up the doors. And all I could hear in my head was, Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
Right, right? Exactly.
This is my indoctrination coming into being
kicking
a high school teacher.
So
that's the same school that now, it's now May, and I'm pulling up in my Ford Probe with a bed sheet on, with a pillowcase tied around my head, with aviator sunglasses, walking in, you know, walking to school. This kid's hanging out on the side of the bus, giving me like the Arsenio Hall and everything. Whoop, whoop, whoop. But, and so the only really thing I learned in college, because I wanted to have a microwave in the classroom, they wouldn't allow it. I was told through the grapevine. And then my cooperating teacher who I was with that first semester back in September said, did you never learn about asking, it's easy to get forgiveness than permission?
Right.
What do you mean? It's like, just take the one of the teacher's lounge. Everyone will bitch about it for a day, but then that'll it'll be over. And I'm like, great idea. So I brought that in there. And, in one of my other courses, I had a kid who was laughing and he kept laughing. And then I said, what's so funny? And he said, I don't think you'll think it's funny. I said, I have a hell of a sense of humor. I think it'll be funny. And so he stood up and he pulled his pants down to show me that he had pierced his scrotum.
Oh.
And I just said, well, my condolences to your girlfriend, but you got to go to the office. Oh. So to wrap it around, you got to be 10% more than what they are. You know, right. Like I could have got mad. And you know what? The issue was dead from there.
Right.
There were no parent emails. There was no this or that or whatever. And it was what it was. Even the girls that were offended by it laughed at the joke that I made, got the kid out of there, removed him from the situation, and that was it.
Done. Move on.
You know? Yeah. What would happen today? That kid would probably be on a sexual predator list.
Oh, absolutely.
And carry that the rest of his life.
Absolutely.
Not that it was okay.
Because he was a stupid kid for one second.
But we're going to overreact because of, So I think we have got to keep charity for what charity is. And we've got to stop dumbing everything down to the lowest common denominator just so people can feel good. At some point, you know what? I don't want my military to be politically correct. I want them to be highly competent.
Right.
Okay. I think Biden just dropped a drone strike on someone. We just killed civilians. You know, we've had GPS technology since 1989. We won the Iraq war in what, hours and days, essentially.
Yeah.
And if you go back and study that, there was talk about that we might have a hard time fighting in the sand because all of our fatigue, everything was green. Nothing was sand colored back then.
Exactly.
Right. But we went systematically and took them out, every bridge, every refinery, every tank that was rolling across the sand with surgical precision.
Yeah.
You know? So I think we have lost our way with some of this identity politics stuff. I think it all started in schools and college campuses. It bled into corporate America. It's gone into sports.
Yep.
Okay. It's gone in every level of sports now, where nobody wants to be the bad guy. Everybody wants to be liked. And at some point, but here's the thing though, achievers are always going to achieve. Okay. I think we all have a unique story. We also always encounter, we all have come across walls in our life. And one of my lines is you have to change your preposition. You know, I'd say, okay, I'm going to put $1 million. Well, no, I'm going to put 10 because $1 million doesn't buy anything like it used to. I'm going to put $10 million on the other side of that wall. Whoever can get to the other side and get it, touch it first, gets to keep it. Now, some kids are going to try to run through the wall.
Right.
That's admirable, you know. But the other kid's going to walk over there, push on the door, go through the door, and then get it.
Right.
You know. So you've got to change your preposition. Some people, over the wall, through the wall, under the wall, beneath the wall, between the wall, around the wall, whatever it is, to get there. And so, like for me, college coaching, and there's guys that I used to kick their ass every summer. This guy, it's probably been about 10 or 15 guys that have gone to become Division I head coaches. And I used to kick their ass every summer. There's one guy that's an NBA head coach right now. I've never lost to him at New York Knicks camp every summer, 4 years. But I had a great time doing my own thing, and I was able to have an impact on a much wider audience
right.
on an intimate level, two nights a week and for 2 hours on Saturdays, for more than a decade. But then, of no fault of my own, that model really became obsolete. I can bitch and complain and point fingers and make excuses and blame others, but it doesn't solve my problem.
Right.
So then I shifted gears into the real estate stuff, and I didn't do it in a traditional sense. I didn't do it in the way I was being told by others I should do it.
Right.
Hey, you have a great database. You should just go in and chase commissions. But then I'm always chasing commissions.
Right.
I'm a rat back on that wheel,
yep.
just running my ass off again.
Yep.
And so for me, it was about passive income. And so, when I was figuring, why do you want to rent that house out and deal with rent? Just turn around and sell the thing. Okay, but then you sell. Then you have to go flip another house.
Right.
And so for me, it was just like, how do you find passive income? And that was the way that made sense to a public school, state school mutt from the other side of the track.
Well, and I think a lot of people are starting to think the same way of, why do I have to work so hard for someone else and get a fraction of the actual income, or maybe the same income, but I have more flexibility. I'm working for myself. And whether that's, we talk about passive income, whether that's real estate, whether that's investments, whether that's, writing a book, whatever teaching a class, whatever that is, online class, build it once, teach it a million times, kind of
yeah.
thing, writing software, whatever it is. I think people are starting to wake up to that, particularly because with this COVID world where you don't have to be in an office, you can, be flexible with your time. It doesn't have to be 9 to 5, all that we knew was possible, but now we proved it was possible.
Absolutely. Like one of my sayings is we like to say, whenever you talk to someone in customer service, they love to tell you all the things they can't do.
Right.
I mean, that's the big knock on them. But one of my feelings is that we put a man on the moon 55 years ago. We can solve this problem if we really want to.
Yeah.
And so, like everyone having a unique story, I'm a firm believer that the American dream is not one dream. It's unique to every single individual person. And that's the great thing.
Right.
That's the thing that's magical about this place, is that you have the ability still, I think it's getting more difficult, more challenging. There's more restrictions, obviously, with COVID and stuff, but and grabs for power. But we still have the ability to go create our own American dream and define that for whatever it is. Just yesterday, riding up in the North Georgia mountains, I came across a young couple, and they were smokers. And I'm sitting on the balcony overlooking the river, and they came over, and now I got to smell their smoke. So, that was a negative experience for me. And I may have given like a look or made it like a turn to make it obvious that I wasn't happy about it. But then there were people floating down the river, and they would get stuck on this one spot. And so then the two people started making fun of the people that were wearing a mask while floating on the river. So I was like, okay, maybe they do have a sense of humor. And, and then there was a group of an Indian family or multiple families. And there was this one Indian guy who was stuck, and he couldn't get, because he was also tethered to the other people. So the weight of them wasn't getting him off the rock.
Right.
And so here you were with a bunch of white, drunk rednecks cheering for the Indian guy
get over the
in Helen, Georgia. And I'm like, if this is not what America is all about, I don't know what it is. And then we got into a conversation. They left Hawaii because of the restrictions that were there COVID. And to the point where, I guess at one point, you could not even walk on the beach.
Wow.
And they had police officers arresting people who were there to walk on the beach.
Wow.
And then they loosened it and you could walk on the beach, but you had to have a mask on. Even if you're walking by yourself on the mask, on the beach. And so they sold their house and stuff. And they were a young couple. They were thinking about starting a family, talking about getting pregnant and everything. They put that on hold. They sold the house. They came here to the mainland. I guess his mom is in South Carolina. They bought a fifth wheel RV and a truck. And they've been living on that for a year. It's been next week is their year anniversary.
That's awesome.
And so they're going to different places, waiting tables and stuff, making money,
okay.
living, kind Jobs of living between. Off the grid.
Right.
They get rid of all social media. I'm like, oh, I want to follow you guys and see you. Nope. Okay.
Wow.
All off. And so my point is that everyone has the ability to create their right. own American dream.
Right.
Well,
tie it all back together. The last, whatever hour or whatever, it's that individual dream, mission, passion, whatever. We go all the way back to you finding your why, right? that's what you need. You need to literally take time for yourself, figure out what your why is, what you want to do in life, and then adjust accordingly, right? You know, you don't worry about how big your house is. Like, what do you need to get to be to your why?
Forget about everybody else.
Right.
The better you can, it's like I used to say that don't worry about everybody else. The better you can, that's what I was going to say. The better you can define what you're looking for, the better chance you have of finding it.
Right.
Okay. I don't advocate as a long-term financial plan playing the lottery, but if that's what you want to do, you have to at least buy a lottery ticket.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like you have to take some action.
Absolutely. Well, we could talk for another 6 hours, but we've covered everything. And I think, or most everything, can't thank you enough for sharing your story, your journey, interweaved with lessons of what's resulted from that story and how you've gotten to where you are. And I think a lot of those lessons or all those lessons are really applicable to me, to everyone else. And like you said, but it's that individual journey that you need to take those lessons and plug them into your life and make it work for you if that's, you know, what you want to do. If you're happy with where you are, you don't have to listen to any of this stuff. But I think it's an awesome story and journey. And you're not even done with it. It's not, you know, not like the journey's over with, but
not even close.
Still going. So,
but the process is still the same. It's just a different way of applying it to new data, new environment, new, you know, circumstances. But ultimately, we have to take ownership over our own reality and our own destiny.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Tucker. Appreciate it.
Good seeing you, buddy.
Hey, you know, these podcasts don't pay for themselves. So I want to let you know that I'm a member of Dollar Shave Club. I've been a member since 2013. It literally costs me $5 a month, less than $5 a month, to get my razors delivered to me for my face and my head. And you have the opportunity to do the same thing. Check in my episode notes. You'll see a link to Dollar Shave Club. You can get your razors, your shaving cream, body wash. They sell tons of products, and the quality is exactly the same as you would buy from any of the regular shavers out there, all the name brands. So Dollar Shave Club, can't recommend them enough. Thanks for listening today. It's always great to share ideas and also get feedback from you. So please send me an email at managemepodcast@gmail.com. Visit my website, manageme.godaddysites.com. In both those areas, whether it's email or website, you can send me questions. You can refer me to sponsors. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a guest. I'd love to hear your thoughts around whether the guests we're having and the topics we're having are working for you, and would love to hear anything that you'd like to hear on the upcoming podcast. Thanks again for listening, and appreciate it.